Welcome to the State of Innovation podcast, powered by the Illinois Science and Technology Coalition. I'm Anne Zapetsky, the newest co-host for the State of Innovation podcast and Director of Marketing and Communications for ISTC.
And I'm Austin Green, podcast co-host, as well as Research and Policy Associate for ISTC. If you love science,
space,
clean tech,
climate tech,
engineering,
life science,
biotech,
manufacturing,
fintech,
really all things innovation,
and you want to learn more about all things technology-based economic development in Illinois, then we have the podcast for you. Thank you for tuning in to our episode this month. And as always, follow our podcast on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also get to know us and our work better by visiting istcoalition.org or by emailing us. We hope you enjoy this week's episode and join us in person at our next program in an Illinois community near you. Thank you to our sponsors and members for making our work possible. And now, let's get to the show.
Okay, we are on the State of Innovation podcast. Our team at ISTC has been reshaping how we are running these over the next few months, and we'll have a few announcements after the show, so you will want to stick around and hear those out. But first and foremost, we want to welcome to the State of Innovation, Thierry Van Landingham. Thierry is a builder, innovator, and currently a coach, mentor, and executive director of MHUB's Climate and Hard Tech Accelerator. Thierry has been part of the clean tech revolution, taking Illinois by storm, and has been in the industry for close to 20 years now. He has also supported and helped lead companies in the information technology, manufacturing, logistics, and Internet of Things space. Thierry, we're so pleased to have you on the show with us to discuss the clean tech innovation and new ventures within hard tech. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Great. So let's jump right in. Let's just talk about in general, how do you see, you know, the intersection kind of innovation, venture capital, policy, and these relationships that we've kind of laid the foundation for? How do you see those shaping the future of kind of the clean tech industry?
Well, let me first start off by saying that a lot of stuff is happening in all of these areas. It's a very hot field. We all know this, and I see a lot of things happening in each of these spaces, but very much in a siloed way. There is, of course, don't get me wrong, there is, of course, good intent and collaboration here and there, but still I feel that there is not enough intersection at all these levels. And guess what? There is so much work to do that we better collaborate greatly together rather than trying to all solve it on our little island. Today, I believe that, on a policy front, it's pretty complex, right? I work at MRP here with climate and energy startups. And one of the questions that I always get is like, help me navigate the system, right? Where can I find what? And I know it is difficult, not only because it's complex, but because it's also very new. Even if you talk to the people responsible for a lot of the policies, they are still struggling themselves in order to see how these things fit together. But I would say that also from a VC point of view, I think there is a lot of effort going on. As we all know, the VC world has been going down a bit in terms of availability and capital. We burned ourselves, quote unquote. So everybody is, trying to regain footage there. But I believe that climate and energy tech is a domain which actually is doing relatively well, right? If you compare it to the others. Absolute numbers going down, but relatively definitely working well. And then when it comes to innovation, I think what I see is that, you know, both on the academic side, universities as well as national labs, and also on the private and nonprofit side, like incubators and accelerators as MHub, a lot of activity is happening as well. Climate and energy tech, you see it popping up everywhere, and for good reasons. So there again, I think we all do a good job, but I believe that, you know, to my earlier point is like, how do I navigate the system in terms of policies, but also how do I connect the startups that I have in my portfolio with the right investors? How do I connect the startups that I have in that I want to have in my accelerator from different universities or national labs into our accelerator? I think there is opportunity, plenty of opportunity.
Absolutely. And one of the, to kind of get a lay of the land real quick, I know clean tech and energy tech are fast growing, and MHub is part of that movement. And ISTC's data bears this out. We have a university entrepreneurship index that we collect that showcases the spinouts coming from universities all across the state. And increasingly, climate tech has been more representative of the full population of startups in that survey. And those startups, they number just over 75 over the last 5 years, have been created at our universities across the state. And they've created close to 300 jobs in Illinois. So we know that this is an area that is vibrant and there's change happening. But Terry, could you give us a little bit of an example of a research institution or an academic setting that promoted a small business leader within the climate tech space, and how some of those collaboration events, nexus events between small business entrepreneurs and academic institutions can really accelerate the clean tech industry itself and accelerate the type of financing and funding that these small business leaders are able to attract?
Yeah, so first of all, I think there a lot of great work is being done at universities and at academic institutions, national labs, and so forth, and definitely also in the clean tech, energy tech space. Again, as we have seen in the various areas of society and industry, also in the academic sector, it gets a lot of attention, and your numbers show it. There is definitely creation of jobs and so forth. I think when it comes to bringing those ideas that come to fruition in an academic environment and trying to commercialize them, I think we can do better, right? We can always do better. And the reason I'm saying is that there is a role for every player in this game. You know, a lot of basic research needs to be done in terms of new technologies that can help, you know, the climate action as well as in the energy space. And that research, basic research, is really well-founded within academic environments. But on the other hand, when it comes to commercializing those research results, then we see that, you know, in an academic environment, there is less experience, of course, which is normal. It's not a complaint. It's I think, a fact. And I believe that coupling that with initiatives, both at the academic national lab, as well as with what accelerators, incubators are doing, could hugely accelerate that commercialization. And I think, as an example, if I look at Argonne Lab with their chain reaction innovation program, is doing a great job where they take, you know, great ideas and they help and accelerate the journey from a researchy perspective towards the initial steps in commercialization over a 2-year program. And I can tell you that we have been working greatly together with Argonne National Lab CRI, and some of the teams at CRI have moved on to become a part of the portfolio at MHub's accelerator as well, because we can then focus more on the commercialization aspect. So I think there is huge complementarity between those two organizations, and that's what we see happening. We have done that with teams from the previous cohort, with the current cohort. So it works because the talk of the town, the best advertisement is that if an old team tells a new team, right? And that's what we had. So it really works. And I think we can do even more. And I just give these two examples. I think if we can tap into all of that and link it with commercialization engines such as MHUB, for example, I think we could accelerate the journey of some of these ideas to the market.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I mean, kind of building off of that and touching on what you said earlier, you know, a lot of people ask you how to navigate these things, and there are things that are already in place helping to move them through this journey that you just described. You know, can you elaborate a little bit more in your experience, like what you feel are the best resources, you know, that are important for these, you know, emerging startups and founders and technologies to access through accelerator programs like yours?
Yeah. Indeed. So if I talk to clean tech startups, and especially clean tech, hard tech startups. So think about those startups that are doing great work in the clean tech space, but also energy tech space, climate tech space, whatever you want to call it. But they build stuff that you can hold, right? Not just software. If I talk to the founders of those startups, then they come with a number of challenges over and over. One is, hey, we need equipment in order to build that stuff, right? And guess what? If you want to build something that you can hold and touch and feel, it's either plastics, mechanics, metal, electronics, you name it. All the equipment needed in order to make those prototypes and then later on moving to product stage require equipment, and that is hugely expensive. MHUB offers that equipment. We have a huge workshop here, which allows startups to come become a member or be part of the accelerator, and they can use a facility with all the equipment, even the staff that helps them to build whatever they need to build. And guess what? We also even provide the relevant skills that are needed in order to build that. So that is with respect to, let's say, the hard tech component, right? Building that product. The second major challenge they have is the capital, the money in order to do, to build those products. Hard tech, by definition, takes more time and is more costly. It is more than, you know, just my laptop here and an access to the cloud and you can get going. I'm not saying that one is easier than the other. No, not at all. But the environment you need requires much more capital, right? And requires much more time. So it's also partly, you know, providing the money capital to do that. And we do that our own by having an own fund, the Product Impact Fund at MHUB, which invests in the startups, the hard tech startups in the accelerator. So we now have a portfolio of around 40 startups that we already invested in. And so the other thing is that we also link, you know, the startups within our environment with other investors, of course, right? Because again, we see more and more investor appetite in the hard tech space. It used to be something they didn't really understand because it's usually different from pure software or SaaS investment. So we see now a bigger appetite on the hard tech side. So that is two things they really need. And in addition to those two, the equipment to produce the prototypes and products, as well as the money in order to do so. I mentioned before, you know, help in navigating the policy landscape. And that's also something we try to do. And then last but not least, I would say we also provide them with the right stakeholders in the broader environment. And what do I mean with stakeholders besides investors? I mean, for example, corporate partners that are typically organizations in the climate energy space who want to solve some of the biggest problems they have and want some help and insights of what is happening in this broader startup world. So we connect with those corporate partners it's a great mix, right? You have the startups, which are nimble, very resourceful. And on the other hand, you have the bigger corporations that want to be connected, that are a bit slower in movement, right? By definition, almost, but have a huge, contact network, both in terms of customers, clients, as well as suppliers, partners. And if you can combine those two, I think you have sparks that starts to happen there. And it also, it's bidirectional, right? It shows also some of the corporate partners that we work with, how you can be very resourceful with very little resources, like in a startup environment. And then finally, we also want to tap into, the expertise, experience, and network of individuals. There are a lot of people who have had rich careers, both in as an entrepreneur, a founder themselves, very successful, or as an executive in a corporate organization. We identify those people and ask them to become a mentor for the founders of our startup, right? And those mentors, besides asking the right questions in order to make a founder reflect on where he is and what he or she should be doing, will also help in order to, make these connections, these contacts within the broader ecosystem. We try to, not only find them, but also connect them and help them in order to accelerate that journey.
We certainly identify with the difficulty of finding that subject matter experts on various policy issues, for sure. And ISTC firmly believes in that there is a power in partnerships. And we talk about this often, and I'm sure MHUB can relate there as well. But one thing that you touched on that I think is vitally important and does kind of lead into some of this resource mapping that we're doing is MHUB has an in-house investment team that is identifying investment opportunities for clients of MHUB there. And that is a really, really fantastic resource for founders, because oftentimes when we talk to founders, both successful and unsuccessful ventures alike, you have this concern over financing that is perhaps the utmost challenge that they face. And we hear the somewhat cynical notion mentioned sometimes that if you want to start a $1 million business in this industry or in whatever industry, you need just one thing, $2 million. We have this regress that happens for a lot of folks, and there is a little bit of a jaded mentality for founders, perhaps maybe right now, but the one that's been present forever, in that financing can be difficult to source sometimes. So how do you and your team at MHUB dispel some of that negativity, dispel some of those problematic cliches?
Yeah, it's an interesting point, actually. I'm a very big fan of what I call frugal innovation, meaning that you always start with the basics, right? It's like, what is the problem I'm trying to solve as a startup founder, right? And I need to have, triple, quadruple, whatever, multiple confirmation of, my customer discovery process that shows and proves that, yes, there is a problem and it's a huge problem. And hopefully you also have a solution for that. And then you start your journey to connect that solution with the market space that you identified and try to validate, your idea, concept at a certain phase. But you do that in steps, small steps. And that's what I mean with frugal innovation. So you try to minimize the investment because you want to validate it. And if it's validated, you can go one step further. And each time you validate, and you will need a bit more money in order to do that, right? And I'm a big fan of that versus those who think they have a great and big problem, think they have the solution, start to build that humongous thing that requires a lot of money and investment, and then suddenly realize, oh my goodness, I built the wrong thing, right? And if you have a great problem, identified a great problem and validated the solution for that problem, I think finding the money becomes a lot easier. The fund in our case does for the startups in our accelerator is exactly that, that we give them some initial capital in order to do that, these first step in that frugal innovation journey. But once it is confirmed, then, you know, you can go out and raise more funds, and our fund itself can do that by providing additional monies, but also our corporate sponsors, they put additional money on the table for those startups they believe are either a great fit with their portfolio or customer go-to-market or whatever it is, right? And then, of course, we link them with the necessary investors that we have in our network.
I mean, that kind of sets up like the perfect foundation, right? So you've got, you know, this idea of, again, we're talking about kind of shepherding them through this journey of yeah. how they sustain themselves. But I'm interested a little bit more in, you know, when you've got them to that spot and you're looking for that investment, you're trying to connect them with the right people. What do you think are the main factors when investors are looking at these startups that you guys have in your cohorts? What do you think the main factors are that they're considering when they're looking at scalability and like long-term viability, you know, in the clean tech business model? Like what are the factors you think are most important to them when they're considering investment there?
That's a very good question. And I'm sure you will get different answer from different people. But I think a couple of things will probably form a common denominator across all of them. I think it really needs to be a product slash service that solves a real problem, to my earlier points. If you don't have that, forget it. So a real problem-solving solution or product. It should also be a big market opportunity. The size of the market is important, right? You can have great technology that solves something, but you know, if it's only a couple of million or whatever it is, you won't find too much investors. So we are looking at big market opportunities as well. And then really important is the team itself. Some people say first the team and then first the who and then the what, right? First the team and then what they are building. Some say the reverse. I'm a bit like both of them are really important. But it's clear when you look at the team that the team needs to come through the door with the great mindset, the mindset that you want them to have, you know, to follow that journey I was explaining in the beginning. It's like, you know, that frugal innovation journey, going through the different steps, making sure that they are validating their stuff, their product, their services along the way. But also that the team, especially the founder, is what I call coachable. I mean, you want, as an investor, you know, to be a kind of a co-founder for that startup, right? You're in this boat together and you want to help them, but you can only help them when they listen to you, right? And yes, they are the boss and they will have the final decisions, but you expect them also to listen to your advice that you give or suggestions that you make. So I think problem solving a problem, big enough market opportunity, great team, coachable, you know, the secret sauce, is what is the differentiator that will make your product and or service pop out from all the rest.
And Thierry, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I know sustainability for a business model also takes into consideration some of these cost effectiveness and the cost of production of various elements of in the supply chain itself and then in creating the business model also. And so you've discussed already a little bit about how some of these hard tech innovations can be a little bit more expensive along the expensive line, and it can be difficult in the time that it takes to do these innovations as well. Clean tech is a little bit of a conundrum is existent there with clean tech, because it seems like a lot of this movement in the industry has been occurring in recent years, you know, the last 10, 15 years. And that's true. But when we think about climate tech and alternative energy. These are industries that have been around for close to 40 years. I mean, the 40 year mark since the United States created its first wind farm in New Hampshire. You've got quite a bit of change that has gone on in the type of problems that people are encountering, but there's also some old problems that are still existent there. I wanted to kind of ask you, in your time in the clean tech, alternative energy, Internet of Things space, what have you noticed that is a startling trend, be it a surprisingly good thing or a concerning thing in the investment space for small businesses in those industries?
Good question. I need to think a bit more about that, but I would say that, you know, I've been in the broader sustainability, climate, energy, whatever you call it. And it's also a bit la mode du jour, you know, it's like, depending on the day, the term is different. And 10 plus years ago, it was more sustainability, right? It's like everything was sustainability. And before that, it even was called CSR, corporate social responsibility. And after sustainability, then it now is more ESG, but ESG now seems to lose its feathers as well. So you see these ups and downs in terms of, you know, very similar type of things, right? And yes, there is some differences, but I remember when we were talking about sustainability, energy efficiency was extremely important, right? Because up to then, you built products and offered services based on the features your customers wanted and so forth. And energy was like an afterthought, right? At least from an energy consumption point of view. And at that time, we started thinking more and more, it's like, hey, energy efficiency should be part of that design process from the onset, not just an afterthought, right? And I think that is still the case. What started like 10, 15 years ago is now part of the normal process, right? It is, yes, we build something and it needs to be energy efficient for a lot of reasons. So I think that's a change that I see. Another, and I'm not going to point a time frame on that, but somewhat later, circularity, you know, recycling, circularity of materials, of components became more and more important. And again, there, it was an afterthought based on current designs, and now and it's more and more a part of the system design that is undertaken, right? People think about how can I think about what materials, components can I use or reuse or recycled, or how does the end of life of my product look like, etc., or what is even, you know, the whole energy trajectory, not only for building the product, but also using the product in a consumer or industrial setting. And lately, decarbonization is the, you know, order of the day. Why? Because we all know carbon emissions, there is way too many. And yes, we can work on that. And to your earlier point, we have renewable energy systems, wind and solar for years, right? But we know that it's only a small drop in the whole hot plate. There are some industries that are so-called hard to abate, right? Because the processes they use is so specific and really, really difficult in order to change. Think about how they make cement and concrete, right? Which is a big polluter, quote unquote. But it's not that these people don't want to change. It's like, hey, if I need to change, I need to change the whole thing, right? Which is, how the hell do you do that, right? It's not just a clean slate and you start over. No, there is huge amounts of capital involved and so forth. So you see, energy efficiency, circularity, decarbonization, all these things take some time to materialize. But what I do see is that yes, there is some how should I say, mountains to climb and efforts to do, but and then probably it goes down a bit, but it remains in the long term a part of what you know the path to follow based on all what is happening today. So yeah, long story short, I think there is a lot of, you know, different terms, but for basically the same. And that's the good thing. We are seeing products that are now being built and services that are offered that take into account all the climate and energy considerations that need to take place. But again, it's only a start. Way more needs to happen.
You know, I love that you're bringing up kind of the order of the day, right? The hot topic in climate change and innovation. And because it's interesting, because we have, you know, we have startups in our, you know, our venture engine portfolio that are looking at those, you know, looking at those kind of hard to abate areas, right? Like construction. So, we've got, you know, a company that's looking at how fungi can digest construction material into, you know, mycocycle. And, you know, yeah, we've got Kadea in the circular economy, you know, reusing glass bottles for water, you know, water distribution and stuff like that. Do you think that niche topics, these long-term problems like energy efficiency and sustainability and, you know, decarbonization, do you think that that is really the place where incubators and accelerators can really place startups and how they really contribute to the bigger ecosystem? Or do you think that there's just a general approach to like a full kind of a full attack, if you will, not just like the little problems, the little more niche problems, but the bigger general problems? How do you see, you know, the incubators playing a part of the bigger ecosystem as far as placing those startups in those areas that need attention?
So first of all, I would say there is so much to do on the short term, on the long term, for niche application, for mainstream challenges, that, you know, there is a role for everybody to play. I think if you look at the decarbonization play, that's a huge market. That's not a niche, right? When it comes to the fungi eating, you know, whatever roof tiles, you know, et cetera, that's maybe a niche to start with, but can become something big as well, right? It is really coming back to one of your initial questions. Yes, incubators, accelerators can play a huge role in there, but they cannot do it alone, right? You will still need those policies, incentives. You still need the big corporations to be part of it. Now, if you want to attack decarbonization, I mean, it's huge, right? And we support startups in the decarbonization area, both in carbon capture technologies as well as in carbon capture and utilization, right? Carbon capture is somewhat of a cost center, but if you do carbon capture and utilization, it becomes a profit center because you create revenues as well that offset some of those costs. But again, if you look at both, the former will need some kind of incentives, and that's where the IRA policy comes into play, because without that, it would be a very difficult start, right? And then when you get to a point where, you know, either the technology becomes so cheap or the products related to that becomes way cheaper because they follow, you know, Moore's law and so forth, like we have seen with the solar panels, right? From usually expensive to now it's almost like a commodity. Right. You need that push, both from a monetary point of view, and that is the incentives through policies, as well as the venture capital coming in to complement it. And if you then put, you know, the accelerators, incubators on top of that to provide that ecosystem of partners and stakeholders, I think you have probably a very good cocktail that will be successful for the startup.
And that kind of cocktail is exactly the one that we are wanting you to get an opportunity to kind of promote on the podcast here. So I want to ask you a question that's going to lead you to be able to talk about some of these best cases and some of the incredible Illinois innovators, even outside of Illinois innovators that are doing work within this space. We've mentioned a couple of key sectors, and like you said, a lot of them are ancillary to each other. And we've got circular economy stuff. We've got carbon sequestration and utilization. There's a number of different things happening within EVs and storage, all of which MHUB is related and connected to. I guess to frame this question, well, we could go to potentially a little bit of a controversial issue. There's the Paris Climate Agreement. They have set a cap on the amount of the global temperature rise that they'd like to see. And they've set that cap at 2 degrees Celsius compared to pre-industrial levels. What industry sector, even startups, do you see as making perhaps the most impacts that could change and lead to that goal being achieved?
Wow, that's a very big question. I don't have that crystal ball, but I would say that we are active in a number of fronts where we can make a huge difference, right? And some people will tell me, you forgot to talk about mine. So I have to be careful. But there is areas, think about battery technology, right? We know batteries are becoming, you know, common all over the place, but there is still a lot of challenges with batteries, right? It's like it takes very long to charge. We see some overheating of batteries and then explosions and so forth. Just to name a few, you know, not that I'm the pessimistic guy, but it happens. And therefore, it creates an angst for the consumer, right? Rightfully so. So in our portfolio, we have a company, a startup that is focusing on exactly that. If we can solve that, that's huge, because think about all the electric vehicles, and you read about it, but also all the appliances that are in need of batteries are, again, a good example, right? So that, I believe, will allow us to make a meaningful difference, right? So another example is in the hydrogen space, right? How do you make hydrogen? Yes, H2, it's part of H2O, which is water. So it seems very simple. However, the current technologies are pretty expensive in order to do, right? So we also have in the portfolio company that is really looking at producing hydrogen. And guess what? From sources where you would think, my goodness, how is that possible? Well, cow manure, for example, it's a methane production, or wastewater, or landfills. It's all methane, and that company has a technology that allows to, have that methane transformed into hydrogen, and some side thing like biochar, which can also be used to really enable the soil and so forth. So, again, there, hydrogen is one of the future fuels that we are looking at, that society and industry is looking at, which can make a huge difference, right? And then a final example would be the whole decarbonization sector of decarbonization of hard-to-abate sectors, right? Think about big industrial facilities there. If we can find ways to capture the carbon that is initiated in the process, and if we can use that carbon that is captured in one form or another, and we have a company that is, you know, transforming the captured carbon into methanol, which again is a fuel source, right? So again, there is a huge opportunity. I only gave three. I know there is many more, but we don't have the time to do that. But invite those who are interested to go to our website, which is on mhubchicago.com, and you can find some of the portfolio companies there. So we connect them to the right clients, customers. And then finally, we connect them also with money sources, right? We start with a small investment ourselves and help them with the corporate partners as well as other investors to fuel their growth.
Perfect. That's a great way to cap things off. But before we let you go, Thierry, I do just real quickly, I want to ask you if you have any pluggables or MHUB events coming up. We know that you mentioned and gave us a little bit of a primer on the MHUB Product Impact Fund and the cohort there. Is there any updates for founders out there that are interested in attracting some funding in the hard tech space? And do you have any additional pluggables for us?
I would say if you have a great idea for in the climate and energy space for one of the upcoming cohorts, we just started one a month ago. Let us know, because it's a long process. You know, we want to make sure to help you in order to have you, you know, do the best application possible to augment your chances, and we will connect you with whomever you want. The other thing I would mention, I'm sitting here in the new building of MHUB. So we will soon have a grand opening. The date is not fixed yet, but it will be soon. So keep an eye out on the MHUB website, because that's the opportunity to connect with all these people here. I mean, we have currently, I think, more than 270, startups, hard tech startups here currently, with us as members, but we have many more even that are alumni that grown so big that they had to leave the space because we don't have enough space. We will have investors. We will all have the corporate partners here. So keep an eye on the website to see when that grand opening is, and it will be an opportunity to connect.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much to our guest, Thierry, for joining us on this month's episode. If you're interested in connecting with the MHUB team, visit mhubchicago.com. If you have a question for one of our guests, our hosts, or would like to see a topic featured that hasn't been discussed yet, please reach out to our team via our website, istcoalition.org. We will be back with you next month, and we're looking forward to it. So stay tuned.